great deal of pain for one reason or another, we have to treat them as children still, don't we? We don't criminalise them early.
No, you've got to give them a childhood. Give them what we used to have years ago. We've lost all these values, Sheila. You know, the fact that I never relied on the welfare state for my children, it was never in my mindset. I had times when I lost jobs. I just got on with it.
All right, I have to leave it there, Jonathan, but thank you very much indeed. That's Jonathan in Bishop Stortford. Coming up after the news, I want to return to that story of two police officers and the 90-year-old amputee. Who they've been found not guilty of assaulting you, but will face a professional investigation. Let's talk about that.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 3 o'clock, detectives investigating a crash at Liverpool's Premier League title parade have released more details about the victims. A 53-year-old is still being questioned on suspicion of attempted murder and drug driving. LBC's Liam Gotting has seen a statement from Merseyside Police.
Seven people remain in hospital after what happened on Monday night, but the good news is that they are all recovering well in hospital, according to Merseyside Police, who say that the youngest victim injured in the Liverpool parade crash is 9 years old and that the oldest person injured is a 78-year-old. They also added that all of the 79 people injured in the collision are understood to be British.
Figures seen by LBC show a steep increase in the number of children being caught with knives in schools, but more than 2,300 cases in the last full school year, a rise of 60% over 2 years. Some involved children as young as nine. 14-year-old Ricaldo says he's aware of five people who have been stabbed.
They know that, like, other young people are carrying knives. They feel like they need it for safety. It's kind of like a cycle, like... If I see someone with a knife, I'm going to want one to protect myself. And then the next person, and the next person.
Ministers say they're working to halve knife crime in a decade. The British government says 22 new settlements in the occupied West Bank represent a deliberate obstacle to Palestinian statehood. Hamish Faulkner says the UK condemns the decision, which Israel claims is an attempt to protect itself. The top UN court ruled last year that Israel's presence in the occupied Palestinian territories is unlawful and called on it to end. Donald Trump is expected to appeal a decision by a US court to block his administration from imposing sweeping import tariffs. Three judges ruled the president overstepped his authority when he used an emergency law to impose the taxes. And an iconic sound could be returning to London's buses. The original Routemaster sound indicated when a bus is about to move off, reminding passengers to hold on. It'll be trialled along with other options to see if it helps reduce falls. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 9 points at 87.16. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.18. LBC weather, mostly cloudy and dry for southern and eastern areas. Patchy rain elsewhere, but brighter and warm in the southeast. A high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. Now, some of the detail that I'm about to talk about needs a bit of a health warning. Just to warn you that some of it I actually found quite distressing to watch and to listen to. The footage, which you'll hear some of it in a moment, but you can see the video in full on the LBC app, which you can download for free. It's footage of two police constables, Stephen Smith, age 51, and Rachel Komoto, age 36. They have been cleared, just to give you the background, they have been found not guilty of assault in court. Not guilty of assault occasioning actual bodily harm against a 92-year-old man in a care home in Sussex who was an amputee. He was holding a knife, a butter knife, so put all thoughts of zombie knives and jagged edge knives and all of that out of your mind. It was a domestic butter knife with a soft handle. Not suggesting that that couldn't still do damage, of course it could, but it's just so you know. And within I think 80 seconds, some reports say 90 seconds, of these two police officers entering his room. This gentleman's name is Donald Burgess, or was Donald Burgess. Within 90 seconds of them entering his room, they had tasered him and pepper sprayed him. The opening gambit seemed to be treating him as though he was a strong physical threat to them and other people in the room at that time. But he was a one-legged man in a wheelchair with a butter knife, and he's 92, and he was in a care home. So his carers presumably would have known of his conditions. And one of those conditions was that he had a urinary tract infection and was suffering from delirium as a result of that. And if you know anything about elderly people, and I imagine that people in care homes do, urinary tract infections sound like a harmless thing, you know, a harmless enough thing to get, oh, got a UTI, get some antibiotics. They are brutal. They can be brutal. They can be brutal if you're young, but they are very brutal if you're elderly and frail. And clearly, a man who's had an amputation and uses a wheelchair and is 92 can be put into that category. Anyway, he was tasered and pepper sprayed in order to get the knife off him. Again, health warning. This is audio from the body cam. Like I said, you can see the video in full, but I warn you, it's not nice. This is the audio from the body cam of one of the police officers. Have a listen.
Put it down. Donald, put it down.
Seriously?
Last chance.
Can you just hold that door? I can't get a good angle.
Donald, put it down. Put it down now. Come on.
Last chance.
Right. Put it down. Drop the knife. Drop the knife. Put it on the floor.
Do it now. Drop the knife.
Donald, drop the knife.
Donald.
Put it down!
Man never left his wheelchair. Butter knife, 92. I mean, I know he had a knife, but if you don't know how to disarm a 92-year-old one-legged man in a wheelchair without gassing him or tasering him and then pepper spraying him, then I would say you may be in the wrong job. I would suggest that's possibly the wrong profession for you. And even if it isn't, it doesn't just beg questions about the two officers, I don't think. I think that begs questions about the supervision and the training of officers. Because surely, surely in training, you would be told, here's how to diffuse a situation. There was no diffusing of that situation. 90 seconds, and it was taser, taser, taser. Yes, they gave him warnings, but the warnings were aggressive. There wasn't any coaxing. There wasn't any softening of the edges. There was no conversation that could bring the tone down and an offer of something he might need or want, a relative to come or a favourite carer, or who knows? Who knows? I don't know. I mean, I accept I'm looking at this with limited knowledge, but I have enough knowledge of vulnerable and elderly people to know that your starting point with them, if they are have one leg amputated and are in a wheelchair and are 92 years of age, your starting point should be gentle. It shouldn't be, this is your last chance, mate, or you'll be tasered and pepper sprayed. I mean, you're not on the street dealing with a 25-year-old with a knife. This astounded me, this video and the audio. It astounded me and was incredibly distressing. It distressed me because the guy, you know, he was vulnerable. He was vulnerable in myriad ways. But if he's got a UTI, a urinary tract infection, which the carers must have known, and it had caused delirium. If you've looked after an elderly person, you'll have experience of this, where there's a shift in their character when they've got a UTI. It's one of the first signs of it. It's like, let's check for a UTI because this has gone a bit kibosh. So let's check. And 9 times out of 10, it'll be a UTI. But for the police to go in cack-handed like that is extraordinary to me. Extraordinary. Now, I understand that in a criminal court, a very particular level of evidence has to be found. And so, you accept that the jury unanimously found them not guilty of the criminal charges they were facing. So that's that. And I may well have if I'd been on that jury. I don't know. That was a very separate threshold that they were looking at. But they will face a professional inquiry into their into whether they committed professional misconduct. But whether they're found guilty of that or not, or found liable, responsible for that or not, I mean, it tells you a lot about the standard of training and supervision of some of our police officers. I had a text earlier on from a police officer saying that, that you can't just train officers in strategy. You have to train them in real life and human beings, and not be afraid to take the time to really address a situation rather than go in all tasers blazing, all pepper spray blazing. I watch it and I think you'll know what I mean. You'll find it on the LBC app. Oliver Lawrence joins me, director of the Public Safety Foundation, former armed police officer who himself carried a taser for some time as well in a professional capacity. What did you make of the video, Oliver?
Yeah, good afternoon, Sheila. Thanks for having me on. I don't think there is any former police officer that didn't find that video uncomfortable to watch. One of the greatest skills, but I think it lends itself to quite an in-depth conversation around whether policing is the appropriate organisation to be responding to such calls as that one, as we saw in the video. Two police officers going into a care home, confronting an elderly gentleman who's not well, who's got one leg, who's in the latter part of his life. Is that the appropriate organisation? I would argue they're not. And I think that's a conversation we've been having as part of the broader topic around policing for the last couple of years. Where does policing fit into society and what should it be responding to?
That's a very good question, yeah.
One of the greatest things that a police officer can learn throughout their career is the ability to communicate, because ultimately a police officer's job is to get people to do things through instruction, whether that be to not speed again, whether that be not to assault again. There's a number of different barriers, and that comes with age and it comes with experience. And I think when we look at the challenges facing policing more broadly across society, it's experience which is missing the most. And I would argue, having carried a firearm, having carried a taser, and listen, those officers made a decision based on a threat and risk scenario they were faced with. Now, I would argue that I would probably have made a different decision on that. I would have argued I probably would have spent more time trying to understand the individual. But again, these police officers aren't medical professionals. If this chap is suffering or was suffering from delirium and wasn't well, again, are they the appropriate people to be communicating with somebody who's got medically diagnosed issues? I would argue they're not. So a very, very difficult set of circumstances, one that made us all stand back and really worry about that. These officers are obviously now facing gross misconduct hearing. I don't want to prejudice or influence that. I would be uncomfortable if I was them in that situation. But equally, I think they're also placed in a very difficult environment that I don't think they should have ever been in.
But they were. And I absolutely hear what you say there. And it is an important conversation, because we know that police forces have taken a heavy toll scooping up what the mental health service is not providing, just as an example of what you're saying. Mm-hmm. But I would have thought that anyone, training or no training — I've had no medical training, I've had no police training — but surely when you stood at the door of that room — and people who see the video will know what I'm referring to — when you stood at the door of that room, you're a safe distance from the net, from the knife and the man, and the knife was a butter knife. It wasn't a zombie knife. They had stab vests. They were young, presumably strong people if they're police officers. There would have been care staff there as well. Surely there was a common sense would tell you, with an elderly person, even if he's being a pain in the backside and doing something weird and ridiculous and threatening, common sense would tell you to try and bring things down first. Let's just all calm down. And what do you need from us? Do you want someone here with you? Is there something you'd like to drink? Is there something you'd like to eat? Who do you want in the room with you? We can arrange it. It's basic negotiation. It's like talking to a toddler, having a tantrum, in a way.
Two of the two of the most important points in the situational use of force model that police officers have in front of them is avoiding confrontation and reducing that by communicating effectively and understanding the situation. Now, you could argue that they could have walked out the room for a couple of minutes and given the chap a chance just to calm down a little bit and gone in and re-engaged again, or called for a police negotiator to come in. Now, they're all very sort of ramped up strategies, which again take more officers on the road. But it comes back to our original point of experience. You know, how many people had they come into contact with prior to that incident where they'd have to use conversation, communication, effective communication to get onto the same level of that individual? Now, that is a skill in itself, which trained negotiators spend years and years crafting that when they're engaging at high level. Now, this is very low level, very sort of, you could argue, run of the mill, an individual, non-compliant, threatening staff. And when you look at that, you look at 90 seconds from entering to taser deployment and deploying parva spray. You know, that's a very quick process. And again, a 92-year-old with one leg in a wheelchair with a bus nerf, which can cause significant damage. But as you say, his mobility was very restricted. What's the situation there? And I don't think, and I think most people would agree, it was handled overly well. It wasn't a great day for policing, that for sure.
Even if you had to manhandle him a bit between you, the two of you, and maybe a couple of carers or a carer, you could easily, by the back of him, get his shoulders back and get that knife out of his hand, or make it impossible for him to use it. You know, there's all kinds of things that could have been done. So let's move away from those individuals. They will be, you know, it will be examined and it will be tested in a professional misconduct hearing. Your thoughts on what the police texter said to me about the training and supervision in some units, in some areas, just isn't good enough. We saw the example of the officer a couple of years ago in Yorkshire dealing with the young girl with autism and going 0 to 60 very quickly, and worse still, taking the stuff she was shouting personally. I've mentioned I've got two brothers and a sister-in-law in the force, and they were saying, you know, I've been called everything under the sun. I've had F's and blinds and God knows what abuse thrown at me. Your job is to ignore it. Your job is to let that wash over you and deal with the situation. And, you know, that's about training and maturity, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, you know, 90% of police training comes with experience. And when you look at the challenges that policing is facing right across the country, it's not London defined, it's not West Yorkshire defined, it's not Greater Manchester defined. Policing is really struggling to retain senior staff. So you find yourselves with more and more junior staff looking out for each other with only 2 or 3 years of experience, responding to these 999 calls and relying on the judgment calls of experience based on their life experience. Now, these could be 18, 19, 20-year-olds in uniform with sort of an incredible amount of responsibility on their shoulders. You know, sergeants like myself with 12, 13, 14 years experience are leaving and moving into the private sector. So who backfills that gap? The demand for policing is so significant that more and more junior officers are having to make more decisions that they probably 5, 10 years wouldn't have to have made, because they would have had somebody with rank standing behind them, giving them the guidance that they needed to resolve something which wasn't going to cause an issue. And that clearly wasn't the case in this scenario.
But these weren't kids, were they? 36 and 53, was it?
Exactly. Yeah. They weren't kids. And quite frankly, you know, a lot of people said, just sit down, have a conversation, understand, try and get on that level. Mm. But I suppose I go back to my original point. This is a gentleman who wasn't well. Were they the right people to be in the room? And I would argue that I don't think they were.
Even though there was a weapon being wielded?
Weapons are wielded within medical wards all the time. You know, the police don't attend 100% of these calls. You know, I would generally argue that an officer standing there with a taser and a spray is more confrontational than a nurse or a care staff having a conversation. Now, obviously, understandably, there's some background to this, that the chap was non-compliant and maybe policing was the appropriate response to that. But the health profession, the NHS, the gaps in society, policing has become the band-aid for gaps across multiple different sectors within the public health service. And what we're finding now is those gaps is exposing a policing capability that isn't quite up to dealing with potentially those types of volatile incidents, which will lead to this. And I think we've got to be mindful of that in terms of when we're looking at the officers and what...
Yeah, and I don't want to diminish that point because I think it's a really important one. But, and I do have a but about this, is, you know, there are plenty of officers and plenty of people, just civilians who aren't police officers, who would have instinctively known that you go softly, softly in that situation.
I agree with you. I totally agree.
And so that's got to be looked at, hasn't it? Whether they are fit for that job.
Without doubt.
But that's it. That process will do that. Thank you very much, Oliver. Good to talk to you. Oliver Lawrence, Director of the Public Safety Foundation, former armed police officer, who, as you heard there, carried a taser in his time as well. Your calls in a moment. Also, if you obviously comment on this story if you wish, but aside from this story, have you ever had an experience where either a loved one or you yourself perhaps were treated in a sort of heavy-handed authoritarian way when gentleness and help was really the order of the day? Maybe because of a medical condition, maybe because of another reason, you tell me. Something where, you know, the people in question might have been the police, might have been a medical situation, might have been a school situation, might have been in the street, but the person in authority, so to speak, went from 0 to 60 at your cost. 0345 6060 973. A story I have in mind is a relative of mine who has diabetes, who years ago was mistaken for being drunk in the street, wandering around, bumping into people. And she was actually just experiencing a hypoglycemic attack. And that was made clear fairly quickly and it was sorted, but initially treated like somebody who needed police intervention. 84850, the number to text, is 320.
This is LBC.
With Lidl Plus Fruity Super Spin, simply shop and spin to win a free fresh fruit coupon with every shop. Download the Lidl Plus app to get by switching to the Retail Industry Awards Fresh Produce Retailer of the Year. 18 plus GB residents, various prizes available, subject to availability. Ends 4th of the 625. Full T's and C's apply. See lidl.co.uk/spin.
It's your home, darling. Let's make it fabulous. High scoring isn't my forte, but there's no arguing with Trustpilot ratings. Shotterly Fabulous have an expert team of fitters who specialise in one thing, simply gorgeous window shutters. Made to measure, hand finished and expertly installed. Make your home Shotterly Fabulous. So don't dither, darling. Book a free consultation with our expert shutter fitters today.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling. Search Kayak for great deals on Wait, that doesn't say flights. Search Kayak for great deals on car hire? Huh. With Kayak, you can compare hundreds of car rental sites to find great deals. Even better, you see costs up front. And if it's flexibility you're after, Kayak's got a handy free cancellation filter. Lovely stuff. So next time you're searching for flight, car hire, at home or for your holes, search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Sheila Fogarty on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Right, let's get straight to your calls. Jonathan has called from Liverpool. Hello, Jonathan.
Hi there, Sheila. Nice to speak to you.
You too.
Yeah, I thought I just had to ring in because I was driving to the office and I heard this this topic. And it brought back memories of when my father was in a care home, regrettably, whereby I used to get occasionally phone calls from the care assistants from the care home saying, my father's lashing out, and can you do anything to calm him down? And going back to your point before with regard to police, never mind police officers, it's about humanity, irrespective of whether it's supervision or training. And it goes back to the other Jonathan earlier on in the program, whereby it's how you're brought up to respect people and to actually consider people with care and not just wade in there, irrespective of whether the police officers and treat them like a guy that's 92 years old. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and I've said a few times on air that the in my period of time caring for my mother, this is what I was talking about when the Pope died, Pope Francis died, and we were talking about popes. And I was talking about why popes matter. And one of the reasons they matter to me is that some of the statements over the years made by John Paul II, for example, and made by Francis, I would think of particularly as well, about what you're talking about, human dignity, the dignity of every individual, really stuck with me. And one of them, honestly, I think was almost, apart from loving my mum, one of them was like an engine room for me when I was caring for her. And it was this. It was Pope Francis said once, talking specifically about the care of the elderly, he said, try not to be guilty of the sin of efficiency. Always, when you're caring for somebody, make it a proper encounter with them. Don't think, look, Mum, we've got to get this done. Get it done. Look, I need you to do this for me. I need you to do that for me. And I have to say, I did fail a couple of times on that front, but not much, because it was such a lesson to me. And I think those two officers were guilty of the sin of efficiency in a big way. Like, I've got to get this sorted. Got the taser out. Got the pepper spray. You go.
It's not just only that. It's the fact that if they treat a 92-year-old invalid like that, what are they going to treat don't get me wrong, there's people out there who want to do nasty things and they deserve their comeuppance. But how are they going to treat people, you know, of able-bodied people, who think that they pose a threat? It's like the guy who got killed in America, the guy knelt on his neck. You know, it's ridiculous. Yeah, yeah. I feel really strongly about this. It made me upset, to be perfectly honest.
It made me upset.
And it brought back memories of my father.
Of your dad,
And all these, most of the time, numerous occasions, being in Wales, going out for a day out in Wales, having a phone call in the evening from the care home saying my father's lashing out. I knew my father for a long time, obviously. And when I went to see him, he was agitated, but even though I was his son, you talk to people in a calming fashion, a smooth. I'm not like I am now at the moment, because I was really, really upset about this.
When he did get agitated, typically, was there an underlying reason for that?
Yeah, because he was frustrated. He was sat in a care home, and he was his mind was still operable. Mm. Therefore, the people in the care home, and I'm sure you've experienced it yourself. Sit down, don't move. You know, wait till your turn, type of thing. And this was a guy who did his own thing for all of his life and had a very, very...
That happens in hospitals as well, because of people's busyness and sometimes because of their neglect. But
I could go on with the hospitals as well with regard to that side of things. But this honestly, they have no excuse to carry on like that, irrespective of whether they're supervised, whether they had the training, or irrespective of whether the police officers, especially if they've got actually body cams on them, that obviously you had the audio on.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous. What happens if behind closed doors, if they carry on like that with a guy of 19
years? And where's your sense of care for the man when you walk in that room?
Well, the good point, because when I, regrettably, I mean, it's not, I'll be honest with you, I've shut down, unfortunately my father died, but by thinking about care homes, I can't even think about care homes, the what he had to go through.
Really?
And the indignity of it all. Mm. As you can probably tell in my voice, it upsets me now.
Yeah. How long ago did he die, Jonathan?
Yeah, so he was 2 years this April, actually. Yeah,
still so quite fresh, yeah.
Yeah, so it's fresh on mine. I've experienced that, how people operate. You're a very learned person yourself. When you see people and you can see things cranking up, where I get involved with certain situations where if I crank up as well, the whole situation cranks up.
Yes.
If you calm it down, the situation calms down with your tone of voice and the way you, appease.
Or someone else. I'd sometimes say to my mum, I'd get one of my brothers to come in, and just a change in person that she was speaking to would make the difference,
Yeah.
Or why don't we have this? Or let's do that.
And you touched upon a good point before, and I'm not degrading the guy whatsoever, whether he's 92, whether he's an invalid, whatever, he's still a human being. You've touched upon a point with the other guy that you had on, that you were just speaking to, about kids, treating kids like that, the kids having the tantrum. I've got young nieces. They have a tantrum. You don't argue with them. You move them away from the situation, and look at that nice, ice cream or whatever, and the situation is gone. It's just it's beggars belief.
It does beggar belief, because it's because all that situation requires to start with. Obviously, it might develop into something else, but the first thing it requires is love, care, and patience. Not tasers and pepper spray. Thanks, Jonathan. I wish you well with your recovery from the loss of your dad. I can tell it's still very fresh for you. Thank you, Jonathan, for your call. Maria has called from Islington. Hello, Maria.
Hi there, Sheila. I just wanted to say, not just the police officers, but also the care home itself. Because I was even saying it to my daughter when the article came up yesterday. I was saying there are myriads of reasons why people might
Listen, Marie, your line is dreadful. We're going to try and get you on a better line. It may well be in a couple of minutes that we speak, but we can't hear you at the moment properly. Deborah in Hereford. Hello, Deborah.
Oh, hi, Sheila. Nice to talk to you. Thanks for having me on. Well, all I can say is, I mean, I've been a nurse for 40 years, and this has really disgusted me, to be honest. Yeah. It's shame on them, absolute shame on them. Where is the empathy? Where is the compassion for this poor man? It just really makes me... I'm shaking with anger at the moment. Really am.
Yeah, it's alarming, isn't it?
Yes, it's very alarming. And okay, you can talk about training and stuff like that, but where is this common sense? This is common sense. And, you know, and as the last lady just said about the carers,
yes.
I mean, they know this gentleman. They must have been... you know, they must have known that he has a UTI. And, you know, it's just about the approach. Sit down, try and hold his hand. Well, if you don't want to go near him, then don't do that. Just be, you know, speak quietly, softly, try and bring him round. Yeah. Not use tasers and stupid stuff like that. It's these police officers, I really don't understand them.
I mean, yeah, they went straight into crime mode, didn't they, because of the knife?
That was
the mistake. That was the mistake. And again, you know, I say this knowing I wasn't in the room, taking into account what Oliver, my guest, said about police being called to situations that they're not really the best people to bring to in some instances. But again, I bring it back to our callers and to my own view that any thinking... feeling adult should know that the initial approach to that situation should have been a softer one. Thanks very much, Deborah, for your call. Deborah in Hereford. Just to say that there are positive noises coming from the US's representative for Gaza and Israel, for the ceasefire going between Hamas and Israel, has a new deal put to Hamas, and I presume to Israel as well, but we've seen a response from Hamas. We'll talk in a few moments to Rachel Cummings, humanitarian director in Gaza for Save the Children, about the humanitarian crisis taking place there as well. And Yotam Confino will join me too, Middle East correspondent at The Telegraph, joining us from Tel Aviv to talk about the wider political implications of that deal. And let's hope there's something in it. We've heard a lot about deals and then they kind of go to dust, don't they, shortly afterwards. 3:31, let's get the headlines from Amelia Cox.
It's emerged a 9-year-old was among those injured when a car was driven into crowds at Monday's Victory Parade in Liverpool. Police are continuing to question a 53-year-old man on suspicion of attempted murder and drug driving. Figures seen by LBC show a significant rise in the number of children being caught with knives in school. Cases are up by 60% in the last 2 years to an average of 12 discoveries every day. And the White House says it's going to appeal after a New York court blocked Donald Trump's trade tariffs plans. Three judges say the president doesn't have the authority to use emergency powers to do it. LBC weather, mostly cloudy and dry for southern and eastern areas. Patchy rain elsewhere, but brighter and warm in the southeast. A high of 23 degrees.
This is LBC.
Calling all young creatives. Kickstart your career in media. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12 at Global Academy. Globalacademy.com.
Imagine your dream holiday made possible by comparing cheap flights on Kayak. Walking on an unspoilt goes on for miles beach on the Sardinian coast. Plunging into the splendour of an idyllic lagoon in Greece. Ah, yes. This is the life. All you have to do is actually book it. Don't holidays. Use Kayak to compare prices from hundreds of travel sites and airlines to find your dream deal. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Next time you walk their dog or feed their cat, when you pop by for a cuppa or just stop for a chat, tell your friends about pension credit. They could be missing out on an average of over £4,000 per year to boost their pension income. Pension credit also unlocks other support like help with heating costs, council tax, and a free TV licence for people over 75. Tell them to search for pension credit on gov.uk. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
How do you grow a perfectly sweet strawberry? Well, it takes more than just soil and water, but time, care, and the best conditions to flourish. At Tesco, we keep every strawberry warm during the day and cold during the night. to ensure they develop the sweetest flavour.
Mm.
It may seem like a little thing, but to us, it's everything. Now, if you don't mind, the strawberries are sleeping. Tesco. Every little helps.
The Steakhouse Stack, with two layers of delicious beef, crispy onions and peppercorn sauce. It's the kind of McDonald's you take photos of to put pride of place on the mantelpiece. Sure, you'll need to make room, but you remember what your wedding day looked like? The Steakhouse Stack. It's McDonald's, and then some. Available until the 17th of June. Serve from 11 a.m. Subject to availability. Participating restaurants only.
This is LBC. Message Sheila Fogarty on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
Now, we've heard in the last few minutes that Steve Witkoff, the US representative, trying to broker some kind of deal between Israel and Hamas, has spoken positively of the latest efforts. Hamas have received the latest deal and the latest offer, so we'll see what comes of that. Hopefully something positive. We'll talk to Yotam Confino about all of that in just a few moments, Middle East correspondent and author who'll speak to us from Tel Aviv. But I want to focus first on the humanitarian crisis in Gaza itself to start with. Rachel Cummings joins me, humanitarian director in Gaza for Save the Children. Good afternoon to you, Rachel. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much. Hi.
I know that the efforts are ongoing and patchy in terms of success for the delivery of humanitarian aid, whether that's food, clothing, medical aid. And there was a warning from the World Food Programme earlier today because of scenes that we saw in one distribution centre where there's real mayhem and desperation and possibly even criminality going on. It's hard to divine, really, isn't it, what's going on sometimes?
No, it's extremely challenging and obviously extremely complex environment. What we've seen in the last few days with the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation attempting to distribute food from Rafah, those extraordinary scenes of absolute desperation. People are starving. People are exhausted. People are desperate to feed their children, to feed their families. And, you know, the situation for children in Gaza is absolutely dire. And every day, I think, it cannot get worse for children. And actually, every day, it is getting worse for children. We had, you know, 2 months of a complete blockade, no humanitarian supplies, no medicine, no food, no water equipment, no shelter equipment, nothing at all entered Gaza. And in the last 3-4 days, the UN have been allowed, under very, very strict control, to bring in maybe 150 trucks. Now, in the ceasefire during the January to March period, 600 trucks a day were being entering Gaza to meet most of the needs, but not all of the needs. So, you know, it's an extraordinary situation here.
How much does it complicate things that there is this suspicion on the part of Israel towards the UN structures that deliver aid, and they, along with the US, have created some kind of alternative to that, and we're kind of seeing evidence of both at play here, aren't we? Talk to me about that. What does that mean for people?
Well, as we saw in the images that were shown, complete chaos. People lost their lives trying to receive food. And, you know, fundamentally, the UN, its partners, NGOs like Save the Children and the Palestinian NGOs, we know how to do food distributions, water distributions. A couple of days ago, Save the Children were doing clean water, drinking water distributions in communities. It was very calm. It was very dignified for the people to receive that support. So we need to be allowed to do our jobs. We need the borders to open, supplies to enter. And of course, we need to be able to provide a degree of safety and security for our teams who are out in communities providing the life-saving services, the clinics, and nutrition points, etc.
Give me a sense of that network of people, not just your own charity, but others that are already out there, are always out there, war or no war. The majority of those people stayed, did they? Or are we now talking about most of those people being Gazans themselves who worked with you and have done for years?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I have a staff of 180 and there are 5 international staff working with our team. Our frontline staff are amazing, incredible. Some of the stories that they share, you know, before they come to work, they have to collect food for their families. They have to try and find water and firewood to cook with. And that's before they come to work to support children that are not their own. So it's amazing to me that we're able to continue, but we are able to continue because of the team that we have, and across the whole of Gaza, the vast majority of humanitarian workers who are directly under attack are, of course, Palestinians.
And is it your belief, Rachel, that, you know, and I'm aware you don't want to get into political territory, but is it your belief that using new structures of delivery is a mistake, or is wasting pre-existing structures that could really deliver in that calm, dignified way you describe the water delivery?
Exactly. I think it's a dangerous distraction. We have a coordination mechanism. We have relationships that we've built, as say the children, over decades with communities in Gaza. And as I said, we know how to do our jobs. We just need to be allowed to do our jobs. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And you talk there about the level of hunger and exhaustion and starvation in some cases. I mean, whatever system is being set up, the reality is that, as is often the case here, the weakest, the ones in most need, are often unable to go to where the food is. It's vital that it comes to them.
Exactly. And that's the distribution mechanisms that we've grown and that we've built and we've learned from over time. Household level distributions work. We've seen the challenges of doing bakery level or from the warehouse. It's very, very dangerous because you have this swell of people because, of course, the desperation is huge. Now, there's 9,000 trucks outside of Gaza waiting to come in with essential life-saving supplies. These need to come in, and the UN and their partners, including Save the Children, need to be allowed to do the distributions, to conduct them in the way that we know works, that is safe and dignified for children and their families.
Thank you so much for talking to us today, Rachel. Rachel Cummings, Humanitarian Director in Gaza for Save the Children. Yotam Confino joins a Middle East correspondent and author. He's in Tel Aviv. Yotam, we can talk more about the food and aid delivery in a moment, but that news that's just broken recently of a new deal being put to Hamas, who've confirmed that they've received it. Do you have any detail of what's on offer, or is it all very sort of behind closed doors still?
Still reporting going on right now, but we do know that it's the U.S. Middle East envoy, Steve Witkoff, who's come up with a new proposal, which would see 9 living hostages released and 18 dead bodies released. There will be a temporary ceasefire that lasts 60 days. And in that period, Israel and Hamas would begin to negotiate to see if they could reach a permanent ceasefire. Now, Israel does not want any clause in this temporary ceasefire that says that they have to agree to a long-term ceasefire. But Hamas obviously wants guarantees that it will lead up to a permanent ceasefire so that they can go back to rearming and rebuilding and preparing for the next massacre. So it's very interesting to see who's going to turn this down, or if they will both agree to it. I'm seeing right
we'll
now...
both in turn Israel it down.
Yeah, you know, until now, they've both turned down several proposals that were on the table. I'm seeing in the Israeli media right now that Prime Minister Netanyahu told the families of the hostages that he agreed to Witkoff's outline and that he's waiting for Hamas to respond. Look, if Israel has agreed, then the ball is in Hamas's court. They need to figure out if they want this temporary ceasefire or if they want to continue the misery in Gaza.
The longer term question that Israel still wants to have security presence for itself in Gaza, doesn't it? And it's made that clear repeatedly in various offers. But yeah. we're also hearing, right from the very top, from the Israeli government, that the only end is an end that is the end of Hamas.
Yeah.
So where does that leave this, I wonder?
Look, unfortunately, the world has done very little, and Israel, for that matter, have done very little to come up with a viable plan to
move
release...
forward differently, yeah.
Yes, so... as of now, the only plan that Israel has is to wipe out Hamas and to be stationed inside Gaza with soldiers to make sure that Israel has control over Gaza. But Hamas are never going to agree to that. So unless there's someone, or, you know, unless there's a new proposal put forward by the international community that somehow gives Israel the security guarantees that it needs. If a new proposal like that is put forward, then maybe Israel could consider it, but it's just not on the table right now.
Is there any sense that I see more about this on social media than I do on more mainstream media, although I don't know why we use that term anymore because social media is very much mainstream media, isn't it? I see a great deal on social media about protests against Hamas within Gaza.
Yeah.
What do we know about them and the scale of them and whether the solution, or the solution is a lot more complex than this, but the undoing of the Hamas operation could come from within rather than without?
Look, I think everyone is hoping that it would come from within. The only thing is that it would be very, very bloody. The last time that there was a civil war in Gaza, it ended up with Hamas taking control and throwing off the members of the rival party Fatah off the rooftops of buildings in Gaza. And currently, you know, Gaza is a war zone. So to have a civil war inside Gaza that would eventually lead to the toppling of Hamas would be extremely complicated and extremely bloody because it's just mayhem in there.
Well, it's pretty bloody now, Yotam, isn't it?
It's bloody now. You know what? And frankly, I think it would be better if the Palestinians finally rose up and said, you know what? We've had it. And there are thousands of Palestinians that, you know, pop up sporadically, demonstrations in northern Gaza and southern Gaza. People who have they're just fed up with it. And they are demanding that Hamas release them from this misery. And by the way, if we're talking about humanitarian aid, I've seen loads of Gazans saying that they're happy that aid is coming in. They don't care.
However it comes. They
don't care. Why would they care if it comes from Israel and the United States or if it comes from the UN? If you're hungry, you're hungry. And frankly, I have to say a few things about the guest who was on. I'm sure her heart is in the right place. I can't imagine being in Gaza doing what she's doing. But she simply stated a few things that was not true. And as a journalist, when I hear it, I think we owe it to the listener.
Tell me what they are, and we'll give her a right of reply at some point.
Good. So firstly, she said 600 trucks with aid came in before October the 7th on a daily basis. That's not true. First of all, it wasn't 600 trucks on a daily basis, and it certainly wasn't 600 trucks with humanitarian aid. Loads of those trucks were filled with all kinds of construction material, nothing that had to do with food or medicine. So you can't put that number out there because it makes you think 600 compared to 100 a day, that's insane. But that's just not true. Secondly, all of the NGOs, including hers, that have tried to distribute aid in a peaceful way in the past 19 months have failed to do so. Just last week, the World Food Program had to admit that 15 of their trucks were looted by gangs. That's just one incident.
Sometimes Hamas, sometimes just criminal gangs.
But to say that they, you know, they just want to go about their daily routine, it's just not. It's, you know, they might want to do that, but it wasn't peaceful in any way.
It's not how it's working.
A lot of the aid, unfortunately, ended up in the hands of Hamas, and we know this.
Well, listen, let's hope something comes of this deal. We'll put your words to her and give her the right to reply to that. But Yotam, thank you very much indeed. Yotam Confino, Middle East correspondent. We'll put what he's just said there at the end there to Rachel Cummings of Save the Children and give her the opportunity to reply. It's 3:47.
Coming up at 4 on LBC, Ben Kentish.
Kill or be killed, the chilling warning from a 9-year-old boy speaking to LBC today. What's responsible for our knife crime crisis and who's to blame?
Ben Kentish on LBC.
With Little Plus Fruity Super Spin, simply shop and spin to win a free fresh fruit coupon with every shop. Download the Little Plus app to get by switching to the Retail Industry Awards Fresh Produce Retailer of the Year. 18 plus GB residents, various prizes available, subject to availability. Ends 4th of the 6th, 25. Full T's and C's apply. See little.co.uk/spin.
For whoever they want to be in life, give them a great start with Well Kid. Carefully balanced, great tasting vitamins and minerals for 4 to 12 year olds with specific nutrients such as zinc and vitamin D, which support normal immune system function. The Well Kid range from Vitabiotics, from Boots, pharmacies and vitabiotics.com. Darling, hold my hand.
Nothing beats a Jet 2 holiday. And right now, you can save £200 per couple with MyJet 2. So escape to sunny favourites like Gran Canaria, Crete and Costa Blanca and get 22 kilograms of baggage included. Book now from London Stansted with just a £60 deposit per person. Jet 2 holidays. Package holidays you can trust. Patronage protected. Subject to availability and conditions.
The McSpicy Frank's Red Hot is back. It's the McSpicy, but hotter. With 100% chicken breast fillet, melty cheese, fiery jalapenos, and that irresistible Frank's Red Hot mayo. Danger, danger. Make it hot. Available until the 17th of June. Serve from 11 a.m. Participating restaurants only. Subject to availability.
Car owners, you could be owed thousands in compensation. If you bought a car on finance from 2007 onwards, it may have been sold with hidden commissions. My Claim Group is working hard to help. So, even if you've forgotten your details, make sure you check. Text CLAIM to 86688. My Claim Group is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Text CLAIM to 86688.
Claims made simple.
Global Player is home to fantastic podcasts.
Hello, I'm Mark Pugach.
I'm Paul Haywood.
And we have a brand new podcast. It's called How It All Played Out, and it's where sport and history collide.
From the disappearance of Shergar and the inception of Bodyline, we'll look back at sport's greatest moments.
Listen on Global Player or wherever you get your podcasts.
Global Player. Download it now for free.
Sheila Fogarty on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
Just a reminder that you can see a video detailing the story that we've been talking about this hour. Two police officers entering a 92-year-old disabled man's care home room. The man was an amputee in a wheelchair and had a butter knife that he was wielding because of a period of delirium caused by a UTI, urinary tract infection. And he was, within 90 seconds of coming into the room, he was tasered and pepper sprayed in order to get the butter knife from him. Mismanaged situation, at the very least. You've been commenting on it. Julie says, after working with the elderly for many years, I always found the best way to diffuse situations was to put some music on that they recognised and enjoyed. It worked like a charm, says Julie. Carol says, I would question the person who rang the police to attend him. Surely they couldn't have given them all the information. I don't know, but they went in there like a bull in a china shop, says Carol. Maria's called from Islington. Hi, Maria.
Hi, Sheila. Hi, nice to speak to you.
You too.
I was just commenting that when I read the article yesterday, I hadn't even gotten to the end of the article. And I said to my daughter, you know, there are lots of things that cause old people to act strangely.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and the example of the UTI I gave to my daughter, because my mother has been like that. Not aggressive, but just acting strangely. Well, more strangely than normal for my mother. But it made me really question the care home staff.
Yeah.
Because if you have experience of working with old people, surely you'd have the cop on to know.
Well, the UTI and the odd behaviour goes together, doesn't it? They can really cause a person to seem like another person when they're bad enough, can't they?
And for me, that's a medical emergency, not a police intervention.
It is, although he had a knife, and if they felt
it was butter knife, Sheila.
No, I'm aware of that.
Would jump out of the chair.
No, I think I know. I agree. It was an overreaction, but again, I can just about understand why they call the police. But although I imagine there are strong, you know, strong male officer, carers there who could wade in and sort something like that out, I would have thought.
And if they know the gentleman, he lives there.
Mm,
so there's, you know that person,
yeah.
Engage with him as a human being, not as someone who's acting completely out of character.
Yeah, it's, whatever you were thinking at the end of that working day, you'd have to look at that situation and say, I've just tasered and pepper sprayed a 92-year-old amputee in a wheelchair. That can't have been the way to go here.
And I know, I do worry about where the care home's head at was at as well.
Yeah, me too. Me too, for sure. And where the training and supervision of police is at too. Thanks, Maria, for your call. Maria in Islington. Michael's call from Newcastle. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Sheila. How's it going?
Yes, fine, thanks. You're a police officer. Retired.
A retired police officer, retired for a few years, yeah. Just to put a little bit of meat on the bones of what I'm going to say, I have worked closely with ex-chief constable Mike Barton and JMP chief constable Steve Watson. None of the comments I've got to say have anything connection with them, but just so you know, yeah, that I've got some skin in the game here.
Yes.
I've worked around conflict resolution and problem solving.
Yeah.
So this is the thing. So I'm going to focus on the use of the taser. And I said to your producer, I've only seen a snap. You've only got a snapshot. So it's very difficult. But what I take away from that is they have acted within the guidelines. But the guidelines are wrong.
Well, before you say snapshot, we do know that from entry to tasering, it was 90 seconds.
Yes, but it's still, we've not got what's gone on before, and in my point of view.
But he was an amputee in a wheelchair. He hadn't gone anywhere, he hadn't lunged at anybody.
It should have happened, but that's the guidelines. So, what I'm going to say is, and this is why.
What are the guidelines?
Right, the guidelines are, and so just before I retired, one of my jobs was to review custody procedures and review body-worn cameras, police officers, and how they arrest people. And to keep it really short and sweet, this is what, because I've got called a dinosaur when I retired. Mm. You use a taser so nobody gets injured. So he doesn't get injured and the police officers don't get injured. That is the guidelines, and it's wrong.
Oh, particularly when you're talking about a 92-year-old person.
Yes. I should have talked him down. But butter knife, come on! But so they've acted within the guidelines that they've been told by their senior officers. I guarantee it, they'd have done that.
But isn't
but
a taser?
Wrong. It's 100% wrong.
But isn't a taser meant to be a last resort before a gun kind of thing? Obviously, they're not armed officers, but they're armed with tasers. My understanding of tasers was that they were your ultimate resort in situations like that. But they seem to use it as their first resort after saying, Donald, a couple of times.
Yeah, Sheila, you've hit it on the nail, and that's what sort of happened. That's what it was meant to be, and it's been...
It's been turned into a primary tool.
I can't talk about specific cases,
yeah,
but my job to review and audit custody, people who were brought in, and to audit the body-worn camera and what's going on, I saw time and time and again, tasers being used. Well, I just looked at it. You know, I mean, I joined in 1993. When
used too soon and too quickly, yeah. I mean, you know, we all saw, in terms of videos, we all saw a few years ago, it was probably before the pandemic now, but remember the guy in the tube station, and he'd already lunged at people with a big knife, and yeah, then the police tasered him and he got up again. Remember the big lanky guy, he got up and then they tasered him again and got him down. That's legitimate fast use of a taser,
yes,
when a man is lunging, yes, at people on commuters with a giant knife. You know, of course you don't ask questions, you taser,
yeah,
him. But God, I mean, an amputee, 92, sitting in a wheelchair in a care home, come on.
It's massively wrong. But I tell you, honestly,
someone's going to say it was within the guidelines.
Pound on this, that will be the guidelines they will have had.
Oh God! Well,
I've got no doubts about it, no qualms about it.
Well,
whatsoever.
Which speaks to the text I had from a serving police officer, saying this: as much as these two individuals have to be, assessed, this is about supervision and training as well.
It's gone all right. I mean, I've still got some lads I talk to who are in the job still, and they just go, "What is going on?"
Oh dear.
It's not like when I joined. You say, "Polish your boots, have your epaulettes on, tie, shirt, have your parade in front of the inspector." Nothing like that. The turn up, they look like just come from the skip. It's rich. No, sorry. confused. Do you know what I mean?
the impact of that hit me late. Thank you very much, Michael. Michael in Newcastle. I have to leave it there. That's it from me for today. Thanks so much for all of your calls. Really interesting. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Catch Up on Global Player and the LBC app. Don't forget, you can stay up to date on the app on the top stories and opinion, but you can put your news categories in the order you want. You can pause and rewind even live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. I'm trying to get it to make tea as well, but so far I've had no success. Download the all-new LBC app, the official LBC app, for free from your app store now. It's only a matter of time. Coming up at 7 on LBC, it's Ian Dale, but now it's time for Ben Kentish.
What about the kettle, Sheila?
Oh, you school. Know, tea's made. You don't have to get out of bed.
Yeah, fine. Okay, I'll get the appeal. Sheila, thank you very much indeed. Hello, good afternoon. At 4 o'clock.
If I see someone with a knife, I'm going to want one to protect myself. And then the next person, and the next person.
A shocking LBC investigation finds that children as young as 9 are carrying knives. Why? Because they fear that they will be murdered if they don't. We've revealed today that the number of children caught with a blade at school is up by 60% in the last year alone. It means, on average, 12 knives are being discovered in schools in this country every single day. In other words, we are increasingly becoming a country where young children walk around with deadly weapons. What is responsible for that? Or more to the point, who do you think is to blame? Call me, 0345 6060 973.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation.